It's live expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Link is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Link Show. Live on Sunday. Right? And we're back at our normal time because football's off this week. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Lines are open. Well, there will be. Fred's going to flip the switch on that. We are rebuilding America one house at a time, of course, starting with yours. I want to start the show today and talk about something that happened this week. It was the week, for those of you who are Jewish, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And it's a time of reflection. So Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish New Year, and we ask God to inscribe us in the Book of Life. And then we say on Rosh Hashanah it is written, and in Yom Kippur it's sealed. And when people die during this week, it sort of makes you take notice in even more of a different way. And I got an email this week that Norberto Rodriguez had passed away. For those of you who listen to, you know, Walter Reeves, who does the show, Gardening Show on Saturdays, Walter and I do this show for Carathon. Carathon, for those of you who've never heard it, we've done it for, I think, 14 years. And for 35 hours, all of the WSB family pitches in, and we raise money to help cure cancer in kids. And it's for Children's Health Care of Atlanta, the Aflac Cancer and Blood Disorder Center. And Walter and I do this really funny show. Well, we think it's funny. We totally amuse ourselves. And everybody else is welcome to join in, called Inside and Out of the House. And we basically tell funny stories, and we interview the kids who were there, and we basically cajole you into donating money to help cure cancer in kids. Scott Slade started it, and all of us pitched in, and it's just been wildly successful. And I think, actually, this year was our most successful year ever. It's just incredible. And so Walter and I, we always are badgering the Aflac folks, like Diane Vaughn, and, you know, we're like, give us somebody to have really, who's really good for our hours, because when you have really good people and you tell their stories well, you raise a lot of money. And there's always this sort of internal competition going on that is completely self-manufactured about how, you know, who's going to raise the most money in their hours. And Walter and I, actually, because of the generosity of you, our listeners, we do pretty well. Anyway, Norberto, I'm going to say his name wrong because I'm so emotional about this. Norberto is 18 years old, just had the biggest smile, was such a great guy. He came to be with us in our first hour, and he played a song. And he's a teenage, 18-year-old from Rockmart. He had bone cancer, contracted bone cancer. I believe it was like a, I can't remember the name of it. It's, all these cancers have really, really long names. Anyway, he got bone cancer, and he had been successful in battling it, and he looked pretty good. He looked really good, actually, and he came to our hut. He drove all the way in with his family just to be interviewed, and he told his story so beautifully. It was just unbelievable. It was just, I mean, we were just, I don't even know how to describe it. We were just so impressed with him and with everything that he had done. And, you know, he was just a great kid. And his parents, who really didn't speak very much English, if at all, came with, and they were so proud of him. Right, this boy. And he brought his guitar so he could play for us. And so this was great. Walter and I were like, wow, let's hear Norberto sing. And he started to sing, and we couldn't believe how fabulous it was. And so when I heard that he had died this week, and I have to tell you, I think there are a lot of kids who we've interviewed over the years who didn't make it, and a lot of kids have. And the amazing thing about the Aflac Cancer Center and Blood Disorder Center is that so many more kids were 14 years in, right, for doing our carathon, and we've raised like $15, $16 million for them. And what we have seen is that even in these 15 years, there's been a dramatic increase of the number of kids who walk out. And so you get fooled. You think every kid's going to walk out. You know they don't, but you think every single one is going to. And I really thought Milberto was going to make it, and so did Walter. And it was a wonderful, wonderful thing. And so for him to die so soon after being with us, I believe it was the end of July, we did Carathon this year, and here we are, mid-September. He died on September 11th. It just seemed too short. And especially since my son Alex, as you know, has just turned 18, I've been thinking about 18-year-olds and all the things that they have to do now that they're entering real life, becoming adults. It just made me so sad. And so Walter yesterday played, he of course, being so much, you know, faster than I am, he had his producer pull a clip, the clip of Nolberto singing, and I thought I would play it. And then Walter has set up on his website, walterreeves.com, a link that takes you to a page, because Nolberto's family doesn't have very much money, and the there's a place that you can donate in his memory. And make an honor. And they were wonderful, because one of the things that they do is they help with hospice care, and they just help. They're just wonderful people. Anyway, so Fred and Ahmad, who are back in our studio, would you play the clip of Nolberto right now?
Turn into wine. Open the eyes of the blind. There's no one like you. None like you. Into the darkness you shine. Out of the ashes we rise. There's no one like you. None like you. Our God is greater. Our God is stronger. God, you are higher than any other. Our God is healer. Awesome in power. Our God. Our God. And if our God is for us, then who can ever stop us? And if our God is with us, what could stand against? And if our God is for us, then who can ever stop us? And if our God is with us, what could stand against? What could stand against? Mi Dios es grande, mi Dios es fuerte. Nadie es igual, nadie le hace frente. Dios sana y salva, con gloria se exalta. Mi Dios, y si Dios con nosotros, ¿quién pues contra nosotros? Y si Dios nos levanta, ¿qué pues nos detendrá?
So that's Nolberto. And that was the song that he chose to sing with us. And Walter and I have to say, but both of us are sort of heartbroken. And Walter's comment was, when he heard about it, now I know what makes a grown man cry. And for me, the same is true. And so thank you for indulging me a couple of minutes this morning as we remember why it is we take 35 hours out of our schedule every single year, and we ask you to join us and raise money. It's to cure cancer in kids like Nolberto, and I wish I could tell you that we've done it, and we don't need to do it anymore, but we haven't. And as long as we keep losing kids like Nolberto, Walter and I are going to be on the radio asking you to help donate money. And not just for them, but for their families who have to take time off work and can't afford it, and even to be able to be by their side as they go through these horrific treatments. And for this family to bring him, and it's like Walter said, you have no idea how far this is. You're such a northerner, Lisa. He's like, this is like an hour and a half drive each way. It could even be 2 hours each way. And they showed up just to be on our show at 8 o'clock at night or at 8:30 and had driven. And then they were driving all the way home. And that's how they did all of his treatments, exactly that same way. I have tweeted out the address for Nolberto that's on Walter Reeve's website, and it's in his how to archive, and it just says honoring Nolberto Rodriguez, and there's some pictures on the page of us sitting there doing our show that night and him with his guitar, and there's a very funny picture at the back, and when you see how full of life he is, you will realize how stunned that we all are today and how sad we are that he's not with us. Anyway, thank you for indulging me. And now we're going to take a short break. We're going to do our news, news, weather, and traffic. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about real estate, all the things that happened this week, because it was actually quite an interesting week. And I think some things are starting to change a little bit in the economy. I'm going to talk about that. Glinkonomics is what my staff is now calling this, the Glinkonomics section. So we'll do that as well. 404-872-0750. We're going to take your phone calls as well. And if you want to say something about Nolberto, I'm happy to do that as well. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 23 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. The number 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Debbie joins me on the line. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, I was interested in finding out some information about a construction to a mortgage that was a one-time closing cost.
Okay, so construction to own is what that's normally called. And basically, when you build a house, you would get a construction loan, and then you would convert that into a just a regular mortgage that you would pay off over 15 or 30 years, whatever the term is. So what are your concerns? What do you need it for?
I want to build a house.
Okay. And you want to build a house on a lot you own, or you're buying from a developer, or what are you thinking?
We own the lot.
Okay. And how long have you owned it?
Probably about 8 years or so.
Okay. And what are you building? Are you building a retirement house?
Yes.
Okay. And so what are your questions about this?
Well, I seem to have a lot of difficulty. I talked to one bank, and they said, I'm not sure if they do that anymore. And I went to talk to another bank, and they're like, I'm not the person you need to talk to, but I will get somebody back to you, which they have not. I only talked to one that seemed to know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically what they said was, after we were approved, after about 45 days, we would close at a fixed rate. We'd have to have the house complete within 9 months,
mm-hmm.
and then it would just automatically change over to the fixed rate. Or if the rate went down, they would give us the lower rate.
Okay. So, and your issues with that are what?
Well, I just don't know. I've never done it.
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit. Well, I don't know what happened. Debbie, so let me talk a little bit about these for a moment, because I think, you know, what's important is to understand a little bit about some of the downsides for construction to perm financing. So they're good. There aren't many loans, lenders that are doing them right now. If you're interested in this, and there are a number of our listeners who we've seen over time have bought lots, and now that they have lots are trying to do something with the lots. Anyway, when you have lots and you've bought a lot over time, what you want to do is to shop it around the best that you can. But when you're looking for what I would call, this is a been more of a custom kind of a job, right, these days. It doesn't fit into the box that most lenders want you to fit in. So you're going to need to find a mortgage broker who can help you shop it around. You can talk to a bunch of the big lenders. They may be doing it, some SNLs. It seems to me that if you're nervous about it and you feel as though you don't have enough information, then what you're going to need to do is just go and get more information. You're going to have to actually figure out who's going to give you the kind of information and what it is that you're going to be able to do. And what you may not be able to do is two loans. You may have to do a construction loan and then permanent financing. And I would expect to pay a significant amount more in fees if you have to do the two loans than the one. But even with the one, you're going to pay a higher interest rate, because interest rates are heading up, and so they're betting that 9 months from now what the interest rate is going to be. So it's going to be more expensive to do this. If you can take out a first loan, a bigger loan on the house you currently live in, that's what you want to do, or an equity line of credit. If you can finance most of this on your own, the back of the house you currently live in, you're just going to be happier all the way around. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time on News Talk WSB. It's 35 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. That's our phone number, and you can call in now. We've got some lines open. Happy to talk to you about your issues relating to real estate and money, investing, credit, debt, whatever it is. 1-800-WSB-TALK. If you'd like me to pay for the call, happy to do that, too. Online all the time. The website is thinkglink.com, and if you're interested in investing in real estate, check out my Intentional Investor 18-part series, 9 parts of webinar and 9 parts of ebook, or 9 ebooks, I should say. And you can find those and some other things that we have for sale at thinklinkstore.com, or just go to thinklink.com and click on the red house and sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Get access to all of the things we're doing in the ThinkLink community. And there is a lot of content going on for sure. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Mary joins me on the line from Stone Mountain. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. So what's going on in your world today?
Well, I'm trying to help a friend of mine that's in a lot of debt, and one of the issues, I'm trying to attack one thing at a time. It's a big tax burden. Like, it was like a $15,000 tax bill, and I'm trying to see, is there a way where you could offer or ask the IRS to take less, or what is the procedure that you could possibly do that?
So this isn't you, this is a friend?
Yes.
Not a hypothetical friend. It's a real friend.
Not a quote, and no air quotes.
Okay, no air quotes. So what happened to her? How did she get into all this debt? Because some of that is going to be key to unwinding this thing.
Okay, well, her and her husband, they bought a second house, and they used the money from her 401k. A little bit after that, she lost her job, and her husband lost his job. So it's just trying to, he got another job, but not like it was before, and she's still looking. And so this has been a couple of years.
Wow.
So this debt has been growing, I think, since she said it was originally taken out. I think she said 2009.
So did they lose the second house?
No, not yet. They're still trying to hold on to that.
And they have a first house?
Yes.
Okay, and they're worried about tax debt? It seems to me they have bigger issues than the tax debt.
Yes.
Okay. So the real issue is not trying to negotiate with the IRS. The IRS debt has to be only one of many debts she's carrying, right?
They have a renter in the second house, so, you know, they have, you know, someone that's paying that mortgage, but this is still hanging over their head.
Right, but I'm sure there's got to be credit card debt, car loans, maybe even some student. I mean, there's other debt that's going on here. So you know that her tax debt is $15,000, and he has a job, but she doesn't.
Right.
So do you know what their overall debt picture looks like?
I do not.
So here's how this typically works, and I know this from my work with Credibility, which is the Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
If you earn $50,000 a year and you have $50,000 of debt, whether it's tax debt, credit card debt, you know, this kind of transactional debt, and you have $50,000 in debt and you earn $50,000 a year, do you know what credibility tells you? They tell you to consider bankruptcy.
Okay.
And discharge the debt. And people are... This is, and it's harder to file bankruptcy than it used to, but when you are in debt tremendously, that's really hard. So the real issue for them is how much debt do they actually have and what can they do about that debt? And, you know, if you add on $20,000 of credit card debt and $15,000 to the IRS and maybe they owe something else somewhere else and suddenly they're at $50,000, $60,000 of debt, if they make $100,000 a year, fine. But if they're at $50,000 and their debt is $50,000, then bankruptcy is going to be the smart move. And so what I want you to do, instead of trying to help her unpack all of this and figure it out piecemeal, I want you to send her to Credibility. And they will go over this with her for free. And then if she qualifies for a debt management program, they will put her in the debt management program. And in 3 years, she'll be debt-free. And if they say to her, we really can't help you, you're beyond our help, then she's going to have to think about filing for bankruptcy.
Okay.
So that's kind of where they are.
Okay. And I will pass that on. You said, is that CCCU? Is that what
you're talking about? It's Credibility. CREDABILITY. Credibility, and it's CCCS of Greater Atlanta. And I think the phone number, it's still the same. It's 404-527-7630, and the website credibility.org. And they just have a lot of great information there. It's just a great organization. They help, you know, 400,000 or 500,000 people a year who are going through exactly what she's going through.
Okay.
And so they'll give her good advice. And that way that you can do what you should be doing, which is holding her hand and being her friend and encouraging her to make the tough decisions. But there's so much more I would need to know. And since it's really not you, it's her, you don't know the answers that I would need to know. And even I, you know, you get to a certain place where it gets so complicated that you really need professional help. And that's why I'm suggesting that you call here. And this is a true nonprofit credit counseling organization. They're a member of the NFCC. It's all good.
Okay. And I will pass this information on to her, but just for my general knowledge, is there a way, if, you know, if I'm trying to help her with this aspect, I mean, I'm sure this organization could help her, but just for my knowledge,
you can't help her negotiate with the IRS, and she shouldn't negotiate with the IRS. If she wants to try and negotiate with the IRS, which does from time to time, the IRS will do not amnesties, they and not forgiveness the way this is. That's for people who don't file at all, and then they try to bring them in, and then they say, we're not going to charge you interest on 20 years of back taxes that you owe us. That's what they do. That's not the negotiation that you're talking about. They're not going to say to you, we'll take 30%, just send it in today. It isn't going to happen. But if she wants to try and approach the IRS, she should do it either with the help of a CPA or an enrolled agent who can contact the IRS on her behalf. You can't do that for her.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate.
All right. Thanks for calling the show, and good luck to your friend. 43 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Elise Glink, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. Jim joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Jim.
Thank you for taking the call.
Sure. What's going on in your world today?
Well, I don't know if I should keep my house or sell it or dump it, get out of it.
Oh, God, this sounds awful. What happened? Did you buy it in, like, 2007?
I bought it in 1999, actually, and refied later to drop PMI, and my current interest rate is about 5 7/8. The problem is I had a house fire, and I've never really recovered from it. I have just... To get the house back into shape, it'd probably take another $16,000-$20,000.
Did you have insurance?
I did. That was a battle, and we won't get into that one.
Okay, so I'm going to take it you didn't have either the right insurance, enough insurance, or you weren't able to convince them that the fire was serious enough.
That exactly, the last.
Okay. Last. And so when was the fire?
The fire happened about 4 years ago.
Okay. And when did your battle with them end?
2 years after the fire, and I had to surrender. I just gave up.
Okay.
At one point. I got most of it taken care of, less 20% probably.
All right, so you still need about $20,000 to finish fixing up the house. Have you been living in the house?
I'm living in there now, yes.
Okay. And so what happened, what else happened with the house?
Well, it's just age. I have a driveway that needs repaired. That's probably about $6,000. Heavily wooded area, there's probably another $6,000 of trees. The roof is in need of repair. And crawl space is damp, so there's issues there. And then finishing out with carpet and then the kitchen, which is just 1970.
Okay. I got to tell you, I think it seems more like more than $20,000. But where are you with the mortgage, and what is the house worth compared to the mortgage?
I'm probably a little under 120, and the appraised value was 147.5.
Okay. In current condition?
In current condition, yes.
Okay. So there's money to be made by fixing up the house. I assume if you fixed it up, it'd be worth $200,000.
I doubt it.
No. Okay. So how much would it be worth in perfect shape?
Perfect shape, maybe 169, 170, somewhere around there.
All right.
Maybe.
Okay. So the difference between 120 and 170 is what you're looking at. 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put in 20,000, you'll make 30,000 on it.
Okay.
So that's really the financial thing. If you can find 20 grand and that's what it's really going to cost you, fine. If not, you should sell it because you've got 27,000 roughly in equity. It's a good strong market. You can sell it, use the 27,000 as a down payment on a new house and move into a new house.
I like that.
So, and then let it go, because what I can hear in your voice, Jim, is that this is just horrific for you. That this is clearly an emotional, angry thing in your soul. And when we have those things, I really believe it eats away a little bit at our lives. And so for you, the extra $30,000 is probably not worth the aggravation of finding the $20,000 and all the rest of it. And then doing the work. Because it doesn't sound like a joy to you anymore. Now, if you feel like you can get there and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, great. But I'm going to tell you that if you have $27,000 in equity now and all you're going to get is, you know, another $30,000, and that doesn't excite you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you should let it go. But if you can see your way around it, there is money that you're going to leave on the table otherwise. But just a little bit, not a lot. And so you have to, only you can really decide how that is going to make you feel and how, whether this is going to be the closing of a door or you're going to feel like you walked away with the door half open.
Okay.
And sometimes it's okay to walk away. So
well,
I think that's fine. I don't, you know, this has been hanging around your neck. You bought it in 1999. Maybe it was a great house. Maybe it wasn't a great house. But mortgage interest rates are still 4.5%, 4.75%, a full percent lower than where you are. And if you sell it, even if you walk away with $15,000, you're going to get a new mortgage on a new house for less. And somebody else is going to come in and let them make the money. So I think you should very strongly consider letting this house go. And just, you'll be fine.
Okay. That's part of my decision is that I commute into Atlanta probably 2.5 hours every day, you know. So if I move into Atlanta trying to find something in Atlanta, I'm going to get less land, less house, and that's always been an issue with me. You know, do I walk away from this 1.2 acres and this big house and go for the little house?
Listen, I'm going to just say this. Guys are very worried about the size of things. Okay. I don't think you have to be worried about the size of your house. In fact, I was with a really good friend of mine, a guy named Mark, last night for the holiday, and he said to me, you know, I have these fantasies about selling my big house and moving into a really tiny house that just doesn't need any work. And I said, well, when your three daughters are out of the house, that's exactly what you're going to do. Jim, let this house go. You don't need it anymore. You really don't. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Rebuilding America one house at a time. Back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB. 55 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. The number, 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinklink.com. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, and we tweet through the show. So definitely want to not miss out on that part of the conversation. At Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Vanessa joins me on the line. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi. How
What's going
doing?
On? It's nice to have you on the show. What's going on in your world?
Thank you. There's a house in my neighborhood that I'm very interested in trying to buy. I know it's a foreclosure because the previous owner was my friend, and I know that also the homeowner association told me that it was foreclosed on, but it doesn't have a sale sign. It doesn't have anything. And I tried to look in online, and it doesn't list an owner. So how do I look up for how to, you know, to get in contact? I know Bank of America told me I would need to figure out who the company that is selling it, and so I don't know how to do that.
Well, is there anything listed on the house? Have you looked up, and have you looked up the address? I don't mean like a sign in the front yard, but so it may be in foreclosure, or it may be on its way to being in foreclosure, and it could be in a period where it isn't available for sale, so there wouldn't be any information on it. You can take the address and put it in your search engine and look for a listing, but if it's not listed, that means you can't buy it, right? Until you know where it's listed and who has it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what you have to do. You can also hire a real estate agent who specializes in foreclosures.
Uh-huh.
And if it's a Bank of America loan and you've tracked back the loan, then what you may be able to do is figure out which agent that handles Bank of America foreclosures is actually going to be handling it. So until you do, it sounds to me like we didn't even talk about what you want to do with the house, but it seems to me that if you do want to buy this and it's in your neighborhood and your friend used to own it, you should have actually bought it from your friend as she was going under. That would have probably been the easiest thing to do. And now that it's in foreclosure, you'll have to wait till it's listed or figure out which firm is likely to have it. But a real estate agent who specializes in foreclosure will probably be very helpful to you. 58 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Lines are open, 404-872-0750. We're doing Glinkonomics next and then a prize pack. Stay tuned for more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Back, everybody. It is 12:06 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America one house at a time. And, of course, we're starting with yours. 404-872-0750. That's our number here at the station. Lines are wide open. Happy to take your calls. 1-800-WSB-TALK. You can tweet me at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. You can send me an email, thinkglink. Is my email address, thinklink.com. Questions at thinklink.com, that's a good email address. There are all sorts of ways to reach me. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. If you're interested in investing in real estate, check out my Intentional Investor webinar and ebook series. 18 parts, 9 parts of webinar and 9 ebooks altogether. A terrific start that will help you figure out how to take even more than just the first steps, but for sure the first steps in putting your team together, understanding how to develop selectivity, understand what makes property valuable, understand how to put the pieces together. Intentional investor, how to be wildly successful in real estate at thinklink.com. Just click on the red house or go to thinklinkstore.com. All right. While you're phoning in, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, I wanted to talk a little bit about my Glinkonomics segment, right? It's what my staff is calling it now. They think it's hilarious, you know, that we sit and we talk about what happened in the economy this week. But there was a whole lot of stuff that had happened. The first thing that happened is that the stock market went up almost 400 and, well, a little bit over 450 points, 453 and change. That was sort of amazing. Mortgage interest rates kind of went, well, they're still pretty high. They're somewhere between 4.5 and 4.75 for a 30-year fixed. And we saw that it was really interesting. So the focus has been on Ben Bernanke, you know, cutting back on the $85 billion of bond purchases. And that talk, even though it's still hanging out there, right? We saw not such great numbers. If you're looking at what's going on in the economy, it's June and July weren't so great. Those numbers don't look so great. We've got people who are not spending what they should be spending. That's not so great. We have Henry Paulson, the former Treasury Secretary, who is out there promoting a new book, saying things like the world should prepare for a new financial crisis. That's not so great. We're seeing that, you know, the world is just not working quite the way we might have thought it was. That by now everybody was thinking, well, everybody would have gotten used to having less in their paychecks, right? Because the taxes went up a little bit. That we all would have gotten used to sort of the humdrum thing. And instead, we're seeing all kinds of news about how the stock market is at record highs. In fact, Time magazine this week put the stock market bull on its cover, which now everybody's saying, oh, that's it. We're done. We're near the top. Because, do you remember when Time magazine put New York City, the Big Apple? It was like literally a Big Apple on its page. That was like, that marked kind of the bottom for New York City. And so Time magazine has had a very strange relationship with economic theory. And one economist said in Barron's this week that if just Time magazine putting the bull on its cover means that we probably, there's an 80 or 85% chance that the stock market is going to be lower than it is today a year from now. But what's really on the agenda this week was Syria. And we saw the whole thing with President Obama kind of putting it out there to Congress, wanting them to take the heat. And then we saw Russia stepped in, right? Putin stepped in, and they support Syria's Assad. And there was the New York Times piece blaming the chemical weapons attack on Syrian rebels. And all of this just served to make the government, the stock market, seem like it, I don't know, like it just was like, well, okay, so we should just see the stock market go up, even as the underlying economics don't seem to make any sense, but we should still continue to do this. And so looking at the numbers this week, looking at what's going on with, this was sort of interesting, global fund flows into exchange-traded funds, ETFs, right? So ETFs are like mutual funds, but you can trade them all the time. There are no restrictions. Like with mutual funds, the price gets set once a day after the market closes. But with ETFs, you can trade, and you can only trade once a day in a mutual fund. If you issue a buy rec, it happens that day, and that's, you know, you could sell that day too, I suppose. But it's really about, ETFs give you a lot more flexibility. And so if you look at the fund flows into exchange-traded funds, there's $2.1 trillion, trillion, in assets in global ETFs as of the end of August. And $17.4 billion was the amount withdrawn in August when stocks slumped. $42 billion flowed in July, right? Which is really interesting. Almost $100 billion flowed into U.S. ETFs for the year through August 30th. And European investors poured $1 billion into ETFs just last month. It's really interesting to watch how this flows back and forth and what this really means. But look at some of the other stuff that's going on. There were articles this week in, I think it was the New York Times, about the, you know, kids who are graduating from college, this 20 to 25-year-old group, that the true rate of unemployment for them in the U.S., I'm not going to talk about Europe or Spain or anything right now, it's U.S., that the true rate of unemployment for them right now is around 20%. So our young people are coming out and they're not getting those first crucial jobs. They have a lot of debt, and there's just some concern that they're not going to be able to make this work, that there is nothing that's going to be able to help them overcome the loss of these first early jobs. And so looking at this and looking at our young people not getting jobs, they're not spending, they're not setting up households the way at the rate that they were. There's still a lot of people setting up households, but there's a huge backlog. Huge backlog. And what you look at and you think about with these kids, and I know Wes Moss was talking about this at the end of his show, that if you invest a dollar at age 20, right, it has twice the buying power when you invest a dollar at age 30. And if the math continues to work, it should have four times the buying power of a dollar invested at age 40. The kids who are not getting jobs now, our sons and daughters, our brothers and sisters, are the ones who don't have the dollar to invest. They don't even have the dollar to move out of their parents' home. And even if they're there, it may not even be enough. And so the number of people I know who are my age, late 40s, supporting their kids who are just graduating from college is stunning this late out of a recession. And so what that tells me, right, in my armchair political life, that tells me that we're having an issue with getting the economy going for anybody other than the 1%. And by the way, the 1% was anybody earning $375,000 or more. We saw that this week. So when you're thinking about the economy, when you're thinking about unemployment and you're thinking about what people spend and what their psychological state is, and you think about the stock market and how the stock market supposedly reflects where the economy is going over the next 6 to 9 months, you think to yourself, there's probably a disconnect here. And so I don't know if Henry Paulson is referring to that when he says the world should prepare for a new financial crisis, or if I'm looking at how businesses are spending or not spending, or I look at the number of people who send me emails and say, I'm still out of a job and it's been 3 years, or it's been 2 years, or it's been a year. Going a year without a job, or you and your spouse are both losing jobs, and the jobs you get are for a lot less money, is not encouraging to me. It's not encouraging. And it's worse in some parts of the country than others. And in Atlanta, unfortunately, just as in Chicago, it's not great. Could be better. It's not inland California, but it could be better. It could be a lot better. And I'm sure that you at home are feeling some of this. You're feeling a little bit of unease. And I understand that. I understand that it's scary to be unemployed 2 years out and not understanding where your next dollar is going to come from. I've had people who are higher up, and they've been unemployed almost 3 years. Thinking about two people with master's degrees, long, successful track records in business, who are out there looking for a really good job, and they're not finding it. Or, in the case of one person, she had an offer made to her, and it was pulled off after it had been made. Then they were like, they dithered around. They're like, maybe we want to talk to some other candidates again. That was after, like, six interviews. It's not the sign of a great economy, or at least not the sign of an economy that anybody has any faith in. And really, You got to have faith. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. 18 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glenk, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glenk is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
I'm so lonesome.
It's 24 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glenk Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Lines are open, folks. The number 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. It's time for our McDonald's weekend prize pack giveaway. I got to tell you, this is a great prize pack. It includes a pair of tickets to see the Alliance Theater's production of Harmony now through October 6th on the Alliance stage. And a four-pack of tickets to the North Georgia State Fair, September 19th through the 29th at Jim R. Miller Park in Marietta. And a four-pack of tickets to see the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, a trip around the world, on September 20th at Chastain Park Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. And, I'm still going on here, a four-pack of tickets to see the Braves versus the Brewers, September 23rd at Turner Field. The weekend prize pack is presented by McDonald's McCafe. I'm loving it. The value is $408. It's pretty awesome. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller today, 404-741-0750. That's the prize pack line. You are talking to Fred, so be nice to him because he's going to take your call. 404-741-0750. That's the number for the prize pack. Good luck. It's 25 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. The number to ask me a question, I see the lines lighting up, and this happens every week. Every week we give out the prize pack line, and then people call the regular line to see if they can get the prize pack. You can't. You have to only call, I'm going to give it again, 404-741-0750, and it's the fifth caller. Everybody else gets to just ask questions. So if you call the regular line, you're going to ask questions. You got to have a real estate question because that's really all we're going to take. Well, we'll take an investing question as well. All right, 26 minutes past the hour. I have just a minute. I wanted, before we go to break, I want to talk for a minute about what happened 5 years ago. 5 years ago was the Lehman weekend. And this is when basically Lehman Brothers, which had been one of the stalwart investment banks in this country for years and years and years, my brother-in-law worked for them, Lehman crashed and burned and basically went out of business over the course of a weekend. It couldn't be saved. And it was really just the heralding of the worst to come. And it's hard to think back 5 years ago in 2008, and we were here on the radio. I was here every week talking about how crazy the crash was. And when I think back now, how scary that was, it's really just amazing to think we all got through it. I did get a comment out that I wanted to mention from one of our listeners who said, when I was talking about we can't have a recovery that only benefits the top 1% is out there, and she wrote, "Faith and hope sailed a while ago." And I just thought that was so sad. It is not sustainable to only have the top 1% benefit in this recovery. And here we are 5 years, well, 4 years after the end of it, June of 2009, and we are not recovered. The full country isn't recovered. Even half the country isn't recovered. It isn't sustainable, and we should all be pretty angry about that. 404-872-0750 if you want to ask a question about money, real estate, comment on the economy, or Lehman, or just hang out with me on the radio. I'm Elise Glenk, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. On News Talk WSB, I'm Elise Glenk, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours, the number 404-872-0750. We're having quite a lively conversation on Twitter. If you want to follow it, it's at Glenk, at G-L-I-N-K. And what's interesting is that we have this regular listener over in Great Britain who kind of weighs in with what's going on in there. And I've been chatting with some people about basically faith and hope sailing a while ago. And this all started when I was talking about how 5 years ago it was Lehman, and were we going to have a Lehman Redux, and that none other than Henry Paulson, former Treasury Secretary, in an interview with a German magazine, said the world should prepare for a new financial crisis. So, you know, one of the voices that I usually think of as being quite reasonable, USA Today, which is not really particularly left-leaning at all. They're very, I would call them popular. They have a lot of popular stories. But anyway, they started talking about this week, just their own view of it, that 5 years later, the financial system remains really vulnerable in this country, and that it's no better than a work in progress, and that another severe crisis in the not-too-distant future is hardly out of the question. And they project that this next crisis would likely be very different from the last one. So it might have the origins in China or India rather than the U.S. housing market, right? If you look at Canada, while Canada may be somewhat overblown with its housing market, they've always required a 20% down payment. Once you get into where we are, which is, you know, 3% or less, it can be a real problem. So, but maybe it's not going to be China or India. Maybe it might be a national default in debt here or abroad. Or maybe it's just kind of out of the clear blue sky from the world of financial derivatives. And what they were saying is that the sweeping financial reform law passed in 2010, a lot of the real measures, the rules that have to go into making that a workable piece of legislation, lobbyists, according to USA Today, have been managed to delay it or defray or defang many of these measures. And basically, Wall Street traders are all happy again, right? So what has changed to what hasn't changed? And I think that the USA Today has done a very good job of looking at a couple of the different areas where things haven't changed enough. But I am seeing these same sentiments throughout the board, you know, from the Wall Street Journal, which is more to the right, to the New York Times, which is more to the left, and others in between. So money markets, do you remember when we broke the primary fund, we broke the fund? Money market mutual funds are only marginally safer than they were in 2008, and the government stepped in and had to guarantee them, because Lehman's default on bonds prompted a $300 billion run. So the illusion that the money markets are just as safe as bank accounts, not quite true. And the government proposed allowing their value to rise and fall based on their portfolios, and that idea was shot down by the mutual fund industry, and now it's just hanging around at SEC waiting for some new rules. So there, that didn't go anywhere. Credit derivatives. Warren Buffett once called them financial weapons of mass destruction, and the regulations to bring transparency to these have stalled. Remember credit default swaps? Congress said they should be traded on open exchanges. Wall Street found a way around that, and nothing's been done. Fannie and Freddie. We've heard a lot of talk over the last couple of weeks about finding some sort of solution to Fannie and Freddie. Of course, now that they're making tons of money, they still haven't paid back everything that we've put out into them. But, President Obama proposed making private investors the primary backers of home loans, with the government playing a secondary role, which, by the way, is what Republicans have been saying for a very long time. And the response was deafening. Nobody wants that. Nobody in the real estate industry doesn't want the U.S. government to back all these mortgages. And right now, between Fannie, Freddie, FHA, USDA, the government is backing something like 85-87% of all loans. It's absolutely amazing. So that's not going anywhere fast. And we're seeing tremendous fighting. And I wrote about this in Money Watch last week, I think, where the newly revised rules for qualified residential mortgages, the QRMs, basically the industry got everything they wanted, and there was like joy. That if you could see the press releases with everybody's comments, it was like joyful, which I wrote in my story, which somebody said, joyful? You think this is joyful? And I'm like, no, you're missing the point. They are overjoyed that they got everything they wanted. So that's not really happening. USA Today looks at the credit rating agencies, which are the ones that slap the AAA ratings onto bundles of high-risk mortgages that they never actually really looked at, and the ratings agencies. That really hasn't changed. They still get paid by the issuers of the debt securities. It's an obvious conflict of interest. It's like, authors hire their own book reviewers, which frankly, as a book author, I think is an excellent idea. No, seriously. But the Senate overwhelmingly passed a measure to have the SEC randomly assign rating agencies, but that provision died. And then you have the bonus culture, right? How much do people get on Wall Street? Well, Richard Fuld, who ran Lehman, got $529 million in the couple of the years before Lehman died. And bonuses last year, $20 billion. It was an 8% increase. Now, from the ground, much lower level, you hear the traders saying, yeah, but we're not even really getting enough in cash anymore to live on. And that's true. It's tough to live in New York, and it's tough to have made commitments based on a lifestyle that you could have expected to have. But now you don't have that anymore. And so it's just interesting when you look at these things and you think to yourself, well, everything's going hunky-dory. Well, maybe no, it isn't. And certainly if you go to my Twitter feed, you will see what is going on from around the country, what other people are seeing and thinking. So from the UK, he thinks the American people are stuck in the first gear just like in the UK. And in the UK and the US side of it, we're, you know, faith and hope have subsided. So it's not a great place to be 5 years after the recession officially ended. 404-872-0750 if you want to join the conversation, at Glink on Twitter, at GLINK, or thinkglink.com. Let's go to the phones. Tim joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Elise.
What's going on?
Enjoy your show. I hope you're going to be able to refute a rumor I've heard from some friends. I'm 66 years old, and my sole income comes from two pensions and Social Security, and I have an IRA also. But what I want to do is downsize, sell my house, and then take out another mortgage, conventional, or I don't know if I qualify for FHA. But I've heard that that's impossible because the loan offices are going to look for a salary income and not consider pensions.
Are any of your friends in the position that you're in and have gone through it yet?
No.
So if they had, then they would know what they were talking about. But they don't, so you shouldn't listen to them.
Excellent.
This is one of the problems with listening to our friends who don't know anything.
That's right.
You have pension income that's regular and guaranteed. You have Social Security income that's regular and guaranteed. These lenders don't care where the money comes from. In fact,
right,
your pension money and your Social Security money, if you've got it for life, is a far cry better than a job that you could lose at any time. So just saying, right? Now, why is it that your friends are giving you this awful advice?
I don't know. I think they tend to be pessimists.
Okay. Well, people tell me sometimes I'm a pessimist, but pessimism shouldn't stand in the way of truth.
Yeah.
Right? Truth is one thing and pessimism is another, but that doesn't have anything to do with each other. You should absolutely be able to qualify. What they're going to look at is debt to income, and you're on what's known as a fixed income.
Yes.
So the key word in fixed income for you is income. Right? And so when your friends go showing off their big fat knowledge or lack thereof, you can say to them, well, I'm on a fixed income. It's true. Income being the operative word. And I would go talk to a whole bunch of lenders, and I think you're going to get the answer you want.
Thank you so much. That's just what I wanted to hear.
You're welcome. Have a great afternoon. 45 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Jacob joins me on the line from Canton. Hi, Jacob.
Good morning, Ms. Blank. How are you?
I'm great. What's going on with you?
I am wanting to buy a home.
Okay.
And that should be just simple, right? It's just a bit walk up to go buy a home, right?
Sure. It's like McDonald's. You just place your order, and then you stand over in the line, and then they hand you the keys.
Outstanding. But I wish it was simple. I've never bought a home. I'm probably a year and a half before I would buy one. What would you suggest are the groundwork things that I need to do to start going forward in the home buying process?
Well, I'm going to be very selfish, and I'm going to recommend you read my book, 100 Questions Every First Time Home Buyer Should Ask, third edition, which I think you can buy on Amazon for about $9.
Okay.
And then the other book that I wrote, which you should also read, is called Buy, Close, Move In. And also, I think you can buy them both probably for $20 or less. And those two books will download about 700 to 800 pages of information. It sounds like a lot, but it will. The 100 question book walks you through the whole process. The buy, close, move in walks you through what's been going on since the year, since all this happened, since the Great Recession, and how you need to think about buying homes and foreclosures and short sales and investing. And it really gives you just great advice about the whole, both of those together will take you from the beginning to the end. And once you read them, you may say to yourself, I don't even have to wait that long. I don't have to wait 18 months. I can go buy a house in 6 months. So there are a lot of options out there. For updates, you may want to go to my website, thinklink.com, where we publish all the stories that we write each week, and you can get more information there. But really, the best thing to do is get information, because you want to understand your place in this universe, what you can afford, how banks make that decision, and the 100 question book walks you through that. In fact, there are there's a mathematical formula that I walk you through where you fill in the blanks, and it shows you how lenders think about expenses and costs and all the rest, and how they calculate what your affordability is. And once you understand that formula, I think it's going to make the whole thing a lot easier for you.
Right. Because I've heard you say if you can afford a $100,000 home, you know, tell them you can afford $80,000, try to go on that middle ground. My biggest concern without looking at the book right now is that as far as down payment, what will I need down on the home? I know the more the better, but if I don't have that, how the FHA and that kind of thing falls back. I've heard different things from I don't qualify to I don't have, I make too much to everything.
Oh, well, FHA isn't about you don't qualify because you make too much. But if you live, if you're buying in a rural or more rural area, USDA has 0% loans. They're the only ones that have them. And that is
right.
Government-backed. Then FHA is 3.5%. Conventional starts at 20%. And so all of those things together, you know, again, I go over a lot of this in my book, but those, just those little pieces of knowledge, you might be able to do something with. So if you buy an $80,000 or $100,000 loan, $100,000 house, and you have 20% to put down, that's $20,000. But you might only need as little as $3,500 or zero if you're buying something else. So you really want to think about the totality of your finances and how all of this fits together. That's why the books are so helpful. But you can go right now today to my website at thinklink.com, and you can start, or thinklinkstore.com, and you can look through some of the other things that we have there to get immediate information. All right, 48 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com at midday every Sunday with Elise Kling on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Blink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Let's go to the phones. Ann joins me on the line. Hi, Ann.
Hey, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a quick question. In my will, I wanted to put my house will to my niece, and I wanted to know if, in that case, that it did occur, would, if my niece decided to sell that house, would they have to pay taxes on the income from the sale of that house?
So the answer is maybe. So let me back it up a little bit. Do you have assets in excess of $5 million?
No.
Okay. So you leave the house to your niece. Do you have any other children?
No.
Okay. So she gets the house, and how much is the house worth?
Oh, I would guess maybe $120,000.
Okay. So let's say the house is worth $120,000, and you die. She inherits that house tax-free. Now, let's say she rents that house, and she gets income from the rental. Then she has to pay taxes on it, but she can offset it for the expenses of maintaining and owning that property. Now it comes time to sell it. If she sells the house within a year, it is deemed to be, by the IRS, still worth the $120,000 that it was worth when you die. Okay, so within a year of inheritance. Otherwise, okay, She'd have to have the house appraised. So now let's say the house sells, and it's been 5 years, and the house sells for $200,000. Her cost basis is now $120,000. It's not whatever you paid for the house. It's where she inherited it. So if she inherits it and it's $120,000 and now it sells for $200,000 5 years later, she will pay long-term capital gains taxes on the sale of that property. So she will owe that. But you know what? She'll have just made a pile of money, and she isn't going to mind paying that. And you are a dream to want to leave her that property, which could help her have a very stable financial future. And so that's the wonderful thing. Just make sure, whatever you do, don't give her the house. Leave it to her in your will, or any, and you can leave it as that specific house or any house that you own at the time that you die, just to leave yourself open or anything else. And an estate attorney can help you with that. All right, the music's playing, and that means it's time to go. It is 58 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Remember, if you're interested in investing in real estate, check out my new series, The Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate, available at thinklinkstore.com, or you can go to thinkglink.com, sign up for the free weekly newsletter, click on the red house, and it'll take you right there. Lots more coming up next week, folks. I think we're back at 12 to 2 because there's football. But in the meantime, you can find me online, I hope you do, at thinklink.com. Have a great week, everybody. Oh.